After hearing about this very serious series of things that we're about to get into, Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, so the Torah then says, on this very same month, B'chaydash HaShvi, Ach, but on this, B'chamisha Asar Yom L'chaydash HaShvi, on the 15th day of this seventh month, B'yaspechem Es Tfuas Aretz, when you gather and you collect the produce of the land, T'chogu Es Chag Hashem Shevas Yomim, you should celebrate this Chag of Hashem for 7 days. And then talks about the Arba Minim, and towards the end, it talks about the Sukkah in this paragraph in Parshas Emor. So what we learn from here, Hirsch points out that the Midbar was the great lesson that we're supposed to take stock of during our Yom Tov of Sukkos. The Torah says in that same parak, Laman Yedu Dor Seichem, Ki B'Sukkos Hashavtis B'nei Yisrael. You build a Sukkah so that your future generation should know that I placed Klai Yisrael in Sukkos when they were in the Midbar. Hirsch says, if you really want to see what it was like in the Midbar, the whole Musar Shmuz, it's right there in Sefer Devarim. The whole Perek Ches, he says, I think it's 19 Psukim. The entire Perek Ches of Sefer Devarim is essentially the message of Sukkos. Well, it's really not about Sukkos at all. It's about the Midbar. And it's what Hashem was trying to achieve in the Midbar. That's the Perek that says, Lo alechem levado yechia adam, man doesn't live on bread alone. That Hashem tested us in the Midbar. He made you hungry, he made you thirsty. He tested us in order to see, would we trust in Hashem? That was the job of the Midbar. And the Sukkah and the whole Chag of Sukkah is supposed to bring us to a Simcha, Zman Simchosenu, is supposed to bring us to a certain sense of security and trust in Hashem and a Simcha deep down when we kind of find out how to live life the way it should be lived. And the antithesis of this is misusing all the gifts that Hashem gave us. That parak in Devarim, as Hirsch points out, talks about, I'm going to bring you to Eretz Yisrael after your 40 years of getting this lesson of how to not misuse the world, how to use it correctly. And you're starved and you're thirsted in order to learn that you depend on Hashem and take whatever Hashem gives you and uplift it. You're going to get to Eretz Yisrael, and there's a risk. You're going to live in the lap of luxury. You're going to have everything you need. The harvest will be great. Everything will be perfect. Watch out that you don't misuse it. Remember what it was like in the Midbar and take that to heart. That's the whole Perek Devarim, Perek Ches. Check it out. So, says our Torah in Parshas Emor, Ba'aspechem es tevuas aretz, on this very serious month, the month of Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, when you finally pulled yourself away from your misuse of your physical world, you've even had a full day of fasting and remembering the core of who you really are, your connection to Hashem and deep spirituality. On this serious month is when Hashem could finally teach it to you. But it's more than that. It's the opposite of what you had in the Midbar. It's when you're collecting all of your harvest, and every person now is ready to take stock of how well he did. You know, the whole season you've been planting and harvesting, and now you've got it. It's all in the silo, and you're feeling like it's time to count your bank account and see how well you did. And what does Hashem tell us now? Remember, first of all, he says, "Tachogu es Chag Hashem Shevas Yamin." So Hirsch has two long paragraphs there explaining that the word Chag means celebrating around Hashem in the Mikdash. It's community. Chag is a circle, and everybody who would have been inclined to stay in their home at this time. This is when you've got all your money and all your produce. It's time, you would think, I just finally collected it all. Now let's stay home a while and celebrate and stay to ourselves. But the time of the Mikdash, this was the time when Hashem says, leave your home. Don't count your dollars. Go to the Beis HaMikdash and bring a carbon chagiga, which is itself an individual celebration of what you've got. It's a shlamim. But it's a community celebration. Everybody together is doing this, one after the next. Essentially, on the first day of Yom Tov, if you can't, you bring it the whole rest of the week. But it's an idea of taking what you've got, but celebrating it as not for yourself, but together in the context of all of Klai Yisrael. So there's a because initially the whole message here of this, we realize that I realize this is a time when you're wealthy, and, or perhaps you're not, depending on how well the year was and how well your crops did. But it's not only about you, your personal taking stock, but it's making sense out of it. It's putting into the right perspective of what all of that is for. So with that, so this, like, what I'm going to do tonight is really a combination of two essays in collected writings. It's also what Hirsch wrote in Chorev, and it's some of what he wrote in his Parash on the Chumash. And honestly, like I said, this could be an hour-long share, an hour-and-a-half-long share. I'm trying to condense it as best as I can. So Hirsch's classic style really is very evident here. In the 19 letters, he talks about what he's going to attempt to do when he tries to come up with an approach to the reasons of mitzvahs, where he differs from the Rambam in Mor Nevuchim. The Rambam, and the Rambam even admits this in a few places, his approach to reasons for mitzvahs never really explain everything in detail. He kind of glosses over details and he just gives you a general idea. And Hirsch has a claim against him that the Chazon Ish didn't like how sharply he worded it. Hirsch writes that it led some Jews to eventually go in the derech of Moses Mendelssohn. When you're looking at the society's norms and society's cultural levels of what they think is right, and you then try to superimpose that over the Torah, you're going to have to, it's, things aren't going to fit exactly. So when the Rambam, he claims, did that, the Rambam couldn't make the reasons of mitzvahs all fit, and he was looking at society in Spain at the time and trying to put all that into the message of the Torah, and sometimes in the general sense it works, but many details won't. Hirsch tried to do the opposite, because he felt that Moses Mendelssohn was trying to do the same as the Rambam, and it was causing a lot of Jews to come up with just general reasons which fit society and drop all the details of mitzvahs in the process. He rather was going to look at every detail of the mitzvahs and from that build the hashkafa of what the Torah is trying to tell us. So with that, let's just put on the table a bunch of details of the mitzvah of Sukkah, and then we'll talk about the details of the mitzvah of Arba Minim. And together they form really almost a symphony of one big total message. So one of the things the Torah tells us about is Al Shem Schach Kri Sukkah. That's the covering. The whole Sukkah is called based on its covering. And the Torah tells us that it's Mipsolus Garnecha Vitvecha. It's made from the junk. It's made from the produce from your granary and from your wine press, but it's the junk. It's not the fruit. It's the junk. It's the stuff that you really is not. It's not available for man to use. It's the stuff you leave on the floor then when you leave. Another halacha is that the sukkah is it's pasul if the schach is connected to the ground. It has to be gedulei karka. It has to grow from the ground. But if it's still growing in the ground, it's pasul. You can't use it. Another halacha is that even if it grows from the ground and it's disconnected from the ground, but if it's a fruit, it's a mekabel tuma and it's unacceptable. And another halacha, if it's also grows from the ground and it's not a fruit, but it's anything that was already crafted by man into a kli, you made it into something. You made it into chopsticks. Or you want to take 1,000 chopsticks and use them for your schach, it's no good because a chopstick is a kli or a drumstick, right? Drumsticks are a nice little piece of wood. You want to fill your entire roof with drumsticks, puzzle. It's a kli. So these are halachas of the schach. Let's talk a little bit about the walls and about the general habitat of the sukkah. So one of the defining things about the sukkah is that you're allowed to make the walls out of anything. There's no rules about what the walls should be made out of. You can make them as long as they're standing, or as long as we can define it as a place. Any wall, you can make it out of brick, you can make it out of straw, as long as the straw won't blow down with a normal wind in a typical day, then it's an acceptable thing. And not only that, but it doesn't really have to be four walls. You can have two walls and the third wall, just a partial wall, and that's acceptable. Shnayim kol chasan v'shlisha safil tafach, as long as you design it correctly. It's a symbolic location. It's not really a place that's going to really, who lives in such a place? But it's obviously a symbol of something. Another halacha is mitztayer is pater min hasukkah. Someone who is suffering and not enjoying himself and their bees come, or it's too hot, or a terrible smell in the sukkah. So that's a sukkah you can't be in. Because the sukkah has to be a place where you're totally enjoying it. You're feeling it. And another main halacha, maybe a big theme in sukkah, is teshu kentaduru. That you live in the sukkah as you would typically live. And that means bring all your good kalim, you bring your good china, if you can, you bring your couch, maybe a waterproof one, so you don't have to keep bringing your couch in and out. It's an attitude in the sukkah that this is really where I am for this week. I really, really mean that this is my place. So there's a lot of details. You know, there's also a couple of other halachas, daifin akuma, like some crazy halachas that good asik. There's some strange loopholes that halachal mashbisina. You can have a twisted, weird wall. You can have a hypothetical extension of a wall that's invisible that sometimes works. All these unusual halachas that the sukkah has together. And from all of these, Hirsch builds a very, very basic thing. When you start to hear what he says, it all like, right, it all fits. So they all seem like random things, but listen to what he does with explaining the lesson of the sukkah. And remember that the Torah already told us why we're in a sukkah. It told us to remember that Hashem put us in sukkahs in Mitzrayim, when we left Mitzrayim in the Midbar. And we've already explained that in Devarim, in Perek Ches, what it says in the Torah, what was the Midbar all about, was to test us and to see whether we're going to trust in Hashem. So we already have a serious clue as to where we're going with this. So first Hirsch points out, let's talk about these walls. The fact that there is a thing called the domain at all, we have to go leave our homes and go into this symbolic domain. And it could be any which way. What does a wall really accomplish other than divide us from our neighbors? Each one of us has their lot in life by which we're divided. Some people are wealthy and some people are poor. Some people have the fortune to build houses made out of marble and iron and steel and build fortresses, and other people can barely live in a shed. We all have different lots in life. If you're wealthy, you had a good harvest, you have riches and you have property, or maybe you have talents that Hashem gave you, personal talents. Don't make those gifts that Hashem gave you into gods that make your life secure. Don't think this is what it's all about. Because only Hashem decides on your survival and your level of comfort and your ease of living. Talents can fade. We can have rich grandchildren, but whose ancestors were those people who lived in the Midbar, in the wilderness. It all can switch what your level of security is. Learn to thank Hashem for your possessions and your talents and dedicate them to Hashem. The schach is that's your real protection. But what is that schach? Think about this. We'll get there in a minute. It's psalus garnecha. It's the junk. It doesn't really produce anything. We'll soon talk about how all of the details of the schach show you that. If you're poor and you don't have anything, move into the sukkah. And again, make that into your diras, your dira for the week. Teishu came to do it. This is your place. And trust that Hashem is going to take care of you. If you're rich, don't think that your riches are what's going to take care of you. Remember, Hashem takes care of you. If you're poor, don't be worried because Hashem is taking care of you. Just like our avos, Hashem took care of them in the Midbar. Hashem peers through your solid roofs just like he peers through your flimsy roofs. And he'll continue to sustain you. He hears what you're going through. Our avos learned this from the Mon, that lo alechem levad yichi adam, man doesn't live by bread alone. So let's talk about the roof. It's made from pesolos garnecha. So Psalas Garncha is not from your goods. You can live in a hut, you can live in a palace, but in the end, says Hirsch, we're all just pilgrims. We're all just passing through this time on earth. Our existence and our possessions on earth are all temporary. So no matter what you got, whatever you produce, that's what's your protection. In the end, the stuff that you produce, put that on top and you realize it's nothing. And it's not really the final product of anything. Life on earth, all of your life on earth, which the whole sukkah represents, is nothing but a diras arai. Your whole existence is but a diras arai. So we talked about what divides us from each other are our walls, strong or weak. But we're all equal. Schach is the great equalizer. Right? We all, in the end of the day, the schach is, we all have the same exact stuff protecting us. Now, the schach cannot be made from anything that denotes human craftsmanship. That's kalim. That teaches us that our protection is not from what we made happen. Right? The schach is what protects us. That's above. He says, interestingly, in one of the places in, that I saw, that the word sukkah is related phonetically to the word zaka, which means to purify, which he explains means like you want to keep stuff out. Like if there's stuff coming in, like, I don't know, pollution or rain, so it keeps your air pure and clean away from the stuff that's coming in. That's where you get to the idea that which is mesachich is a protection. So to purify your space is the same as protecting your space. Interesting. Only Hirsch can think of these things. So if you're making your protection from your own man-made stuff, then you come to believe what I do is what really protects me. So we can't have any of that. That's why we can allow, Hashem wouldn't allow kalim, things that you made that are a final product, to be your protection. It can't be attached to the ground either, even though that comes from God. It's all grown. But that represents the pure, unbridled, uncontrollable forces of nature. And that's not where man is either. Man's not just a product of existence where we just have the nature gives him his protection, like an animal. If it would still be growing from the ground, we would fool ourselves that nature itself protects us. And that's why a fruit, even if it's disconnected, it's what nature made man have. The fruit of the tree, nature gave you this. But we don't want to look at it that way. We want to look at it, there's nothing. This thing can offer me nothing. It's just a piece of nature that in and of itself can't do anything for me. It's not what I made, and it's not what nature made for me. It's nothing that can really be used. And yet somehow, I got my protection from that, if Hashem wills it. You can tell me it's going to rain, I have to go inside. But that's the symbol of the schach. That only Psalas Garmi Yekev, the schach, this equalizer, makes us all equally humble, equally joyful, and content, realizing that I can't make it happen, so leave go a little bit. I'm not going to really, as hard as I'm going to try, I can't really guarantee my destiny and my security anyway. That's why, if you really get this message, that's why the halacha is mitztayer is patur min hasukkah. Someone who is not enjoying himself, he shouldn't be in the sukkah. The goal of the sukkah is to be able to say to yourself, in this atmosphere where I have come to realize that my protection is really not anything I'm in control over, but it's all bi'at Hashem, and life is just transitory, and it's all okay, whatever Hashem is going to determine, that should bring a person into a kind of a simcha. I'll read Hirsch's words here in one of his essays. Not troubled and worn out, not sad and gloomy is the life we lead in our personal mishkan, built by trust in Hashem and covered by the love of Hashem. Why should you worry that it is only a diras arai, a transitory hut? The walls may fall. The covering may wither in a storm. God may call you outside. But the sheltering love of God is everywhere and constantly with you. And where it bids you dwell, were it only for a moment, in the most fleeting and transitory dwelling, Teshvu Kein Tiduru. Live in there as if it's your home, as calmly and securely as if it were your house forever. Every minute that you're in, wherever you're at, This is where Hashem wants you to be. That's Teshuva Kein Tiduru. Let me read you something that Hirsch says about that in one of his essays as well. Teshuva Kein Tiduru, consecrate yourself with total devotion to the divinely ordained tasks to be performed even in your temporary huts. This is the key to your entire life. Behold, joy and bliss before God do not flourish in a homeless, childless, celibate, single life. Paradise on earth consists of marriage, children, a satisfactory conjugal life, positive interactions between parents, children, and siblings. It also includes worries and strains. It requires dedicated self-sacrifice, devotion, self-denial, and love. Thus, all the normal aspects of life, ke'ein tiduru, are sanctified by God. Basically, all of life is what we're supposed to have in our moments in the sukkah. And all of that is part of this lesson of this is what it should be. All the struggles, all the tests, and living up to the test is exactly what it should be. You're not in control. Don't think because you can earn a good living or you can't that that's what fixes your life's position. That's part of the struggle. That's your obligation to make those efforts. But at the end of the day, all of your efforts and all the other things that you described in life itself, all of the aspects of life is what you bring into the sukkah and trust that Hashem is there with you, giving you your obligations and leave go a little bit. You can't really run everything. You can do what you can do. And he mentions that there's like a dual nature of man over here. There's the walls, which is, you can be as permanent as you want them. And then there's the schach, which is kind of flimsy. The whole thing is a dearest. All right, it's a temporary existence. He writes, the seven-day festival is designed to reveal to us the dual personality of man, consisting of strength and weakness, transience and durability, the temporary and the eternal, arai and keva, schach and mechitzos, are only an exhortation for a lasting peace to be acquired under a very temporary roof. That's all of life right there. The sukkah is basically saying, you're not in control, and things that you think you've fixed and you got a retirement account and you exercise and you're real healthy and you're doing all the right things. Everything is in Biyad Hashem. Everything is Biyad Hashem. So that's the message of the sukkah. We'll soon see that the sukkah works together with the Abaminim in the most amazing way. So then the Torah tells us that on this first day, on the Araisa, it's the first day everywhere in the Mikdash and outside the Beis HaMikdash, there's a mitzvah of the Abaminim. And Hirsch says the following, really, really amazing. There's really three ideas that the Torah wants to address here. Gifts from Hashem can be categorized in three different ways. There are some things in nature that Hashem gives us that require no finishing touches by the hand of man. They're ready to go. So, for example, air. The air we breathe, it's already done. The light of the sun, it is what it is. We got it already. Beauty in nature. You go see a beautiful mountain or something. Gardens, sweet-smelling flowers. So Hirsch writes, sweet-smelling things stand out in this group. And maybe because it's almost like such an amazing gift. Like Hashem is just saying, not only are you getting things that you really must have, like air and water, ready to go, but I'm going to give you a bonus, something that's delicious, that's just special, nice, and enjoy it. We have another category of things that Hashem gives us, gifts, things in nature that are inherently a benefit to man, but they do require man to extract that benefit. And there's a lot of things like that, but particularly food stands out in this grouping. Right? We get a lot of stuff where maybe some of it's ready to go. You take an apple off the tree, it's ready to go. But many kinds of food, you got to chop it and dice it and cook it before you can make anything out of it. You know what I mean? Nobody enjoys a potato raw. You got to cook it. And meat is nice, but you got to cook it and grill it, whatever. So that's another case. So you have your first two. One is a total gift, ready to go. This next one is things in nature of benefit, but man needs to do something to extract the benefit. And then there's another category which depend entirely on the hand of man to become useful. Man will exercise his power as their master of these gifts by his skill, and then he makes them useful. In other words, nature supplies man with the raw materials, and then man will then build his house from it. He'll make clothing, he'll make utensils. So this is represented in general by things like wood. Wood does that for you. A piece of wood. You got to carve it and knock it together and build a house out of it, build a table, build a chair out of it, make chopsticks, drumsticks. Says Hirsch, listen to what the three out of the four of the Arba Minim are. The Hadassim, they represent that first group, which is nothing but these ready to go gifts. The Hadassim really serve a purpose of nice smell. In Eretz Yisrael, you have a daven, one of these minyanim, they give out Hadassim for you, besamim. They'll make the bracha, but I think daven, after, by Kiddush Levana, there's always somebody in the shul that I used to go to that would hand out Hadassim for a bari atzi besamim. That represents these gifts ready to go. The lulav, which is from a date tree, represents the food, things that benefit to man, but require man's efforts to extract the benefit. The aravas represent wood. There's nothing that aravas can do besides, you can't do anything with them, but they represent this category of things that man gets a gift from Hashem, but man has to do something with it to put it to use. And the esrog is the first and the second group combined. It both smells good and it's a food. So this is how Hirsch would look at the Arba Minim. Take all of these gifts that Hashem always provides man with. And they represent all the various kinds of gifts that Hashem ever gives man. And it has to be lochem. You have to own it. Let's talk about some of these halachas of what happens with the Arba Minim. Well, we have Netila, Nanuim, and Hakafas. We have to take it, you have to hold it, you have to own it. That's a din lachem. There's a shaking of the lulav, which it goes in four directions. First, you shake it out, and then you bring it back to yourself in each direction. Out and back. Out and back. Out and back. If you're Hasidish, you do a slightly different order. Up, back to yourself. Down, back to yourself. So we have to talk about what that symbolizes. And then we've got this other thing that we do, which is hakafas. We, in the Beis HaMikdash, that we go around the Mizbeach. There's Hashanas, which is Machlokes in the Gemara, exactly what they did. Apparently the Gemara comes out saying they would lean very tall Aravas against the Mizbeach. We take them, we hold them in our hands on the last day. There's Hashanas that we do every day with our Arba Minim around, today around the Bima. All of that needs explaining. So let's, and there's more, but that the fruit and the tree taste the same. There's a lot going on here. There's a din hadar, that it should be beautiful, and every one of the Arba Minim have a din hadar that apply to them too. Well, so we'll try to extract what we can from all of these halachas. Okay. So the message essentially is that, and also this mitzvah of carrying, of shaking them and holding them is essentially lefnei Hashem alakechem. It's in the Beis HaMikdash primarily, all 7 days. The first day is begvulin, outside the Mikdash, where we take the Arba Minim, deraisa. We keep it all 7 days, echel HaMikdash. But midiraisa, it's basically celebrating the possessions Hashem gave you. And there's a limit to that, because your stuff is going to wilt and not always be there. Lefnei Hashem alakechem, though, that's eternal. That's why there it's all 7 days. Because the gifts are just a symbol, it's a medium to get you to realize your connection to Hashem. When you take the nanum, first of all, let's talk about hadar, the beauty of it. Whether it's something that's flimsy and not serving you well, or you have to do a lot, it's all beautiful. Every gift of Hashem has a purpose and can be made uplifting and beautiful. And it's only useful and it's only holy thing if it's lachem. If you earned it honestly, a guzzle and a shawl is puzzle, stealing it or borrowing it. No, hard-earned work that you committed to and you did, that's what's beautiful in the eyes of Hashem. You acknowledging its value, every single thing has a value. But when is it valuable? The Nanuim tell you, these gifts from Hashem, you don't just take them. Remember, this is the Chag HaAsif, the time of your harvest. And you've already broken away from your home, you've gone to the Beis HaMikdash. and you're celebrating as a community. And first you're partaking of the Shlomo, the Chagiga, and realizing it's all an uplifting moment around the Mikdash, all holy. But these Arba Minim, the first thing you do with these gifts from Hashem, represented by all four Minim, all kinds of gifts, you don't just keep them for yourself, you spread them out. They're a benefit to the world around you. First it goes out, then it goes back in all directions. What of the gifts of Hashem can I make of use to you, to the world, to Klal Yisrael, to the society around me? When can I uplift it? You raise them up, and only then do you bring them back down. When you makdish everything, you make it holy, that's when it's of great value to yourself. So, as you're beginning to see, there's a whole amazing message going on with the Arba Minim. These gifts of Hashem are truly, that's when it's your treasure. That's when you understand what to do with these gifts of Hashem. Let me read you something really profound about the combination of the message of the Sukkah and how it interplays with the message of the Arba Minim. You can find this in Chorev on page 132. If the observance of Sukkah during the festival of Sukkot frees us from the bonds with which we tie ourselves to worldly possessions as the basis of our life and the anchor of our hopes, if it teaches us humility despite our material wealth and trust in God even without it, as we spoke about the different people, different wealth that you have, depending on whether you're rich or poor, what kind of walls you'll have, then the observance of Lulav causes us to rise to things higher, to simcha, rejoicing before God and all that he has bestowed upon us. The sukkah negates material possessions as ultimate value. The lulav links us again with our dependence upon our goods and chattels. The sukkah teaches us not to appraise too highly our worldly goods. The lulav, to value them at their true worth. The sukkah raises us above our property to God alone. The lulav teaches us to be imbued with the Spirit of God and even to exalt our possessions as God-given. The sukkah prevents us from becoming too earthly. The lulav reminds us not to soar too high above the earthly. The sukkah protects us from being debased by our wealth. The lulav teaches us to cherish our possessions and dedicate them to sacred purposes as the gifts of God. The lesson of the sukkah is that the acquisition of goods is not the sole aim of life. The lulav teaches us to apprehend goods as instruments for our way of life before God. And so it brings us simcha in living before God in a life of godliness. For if life is understood thus, it makes no difference whether you attain much or little. The assessment of your life lies in whether you have lived it dutifully with your much or your little, just doing the Ratzon Hashem. From this wells up the eternally joyful fountain of life, sublime in the service of God, of simcha before God, l'fnei Hashem Elokecha, of that happiness which rejoices him who possesses much or little as the gift of God by which he can fulfill the will of God on earth, the happiness of living in the presence of your God, a happiness which is as eternal as life itself and as God who is its source. It's amazing. To me, that just makes me want to dance when I hear those two together. So that's why it's Lefnei Hashem Elokeichem in the Mikdash, where this message can come 100% into our hearts, where we fully realize it. The Hashanahs, that we take the Aravos. So think about what the Hashanahs were. If you remember the Arba Minim, so the willows, right, the Aravos represent that which man himself makes. And you can begin to think that you're the sole master of everything. So if there's any one of the Arba Minim that need to drill home, not to have over pride in your possessions, which we left our home to go out into the sukkah about, it's the Aravos. And it was a minute Nevi'im to take these Aravos and strike them to the ground. This is the beginning of the time when the Nevi'im saw Golus is going to come 150 years down the road. They saw that exactly what Moshe Rabbeinu warned about in Perek Ches of Devarim is starting to happen, that the wealth and the riches of Eretz Yisrael were beginning to affect them And they started to think, as it says in that parak, that my personal strength is what made it all happen. So they made this takana, that you take a ravas, which represent the things that you yourself make, and you strike them to the ground, and you say, that's not what it's about. It's supposed to be taken as a gift from Hashem and uplifted. But if I misuse it and I think it's all about me, I'm a craftsman, I'm a good farmer, I'm a great investor, I'm so smart, I'm so diligent that I can work extra hours and make more, you're going to lose it all soon. So they took their arrows and they struck them to the ground. Seven times around the Mizbech, they marched around the Mizbech. Now, I think it's the Raisa there, if I'm not mistaken, the Gemara says, Kedei lefarsim mashim min ha-Torah, that it's Halach l'mashim b'Sinai, that the Zekifa of Aravos is the Raisa. But striking it to the ground, that's the Minhag Neviim. That the gifts of nature shouldn't get to our heads. The Torah is teaching us dedicating everything to Hashem is what everything pivots around. And that's why it's in the center. When we do the Hashanahs, we're taking all these gifts of Hashem, and Bizman Azeh, what do? We put the Torah in the center. With the Torah in the middle, that's what we do by Hashanahs, right? Every one of the 7 days, we take the Torah out of the Aron Kodesh, we put it by the Bima. Just like they used to walk around the Mizbech. And according to Hirsch, the Mizbech represents Eish Das. It's the fire of the Torah. That's Hirsch's whole approach to the Mizbech. So we take the Torah in the center. And around that, we take all the possessions. We say all these gifts of our life, of our temporary life in Olam Hazeh, we're going to take them, uplift them, dedicate them to Hashem. That's the message of the Hashanahs. And if you look at the beautiful poetry that's in the Hashanahs, it all talks about ultimately the world's going to get this message. We didn't even talk about how this fits into more than the individual, how the whole nation and the whole plan of eternity is built around this. That's maybe we'll talk about that next week when we talk about the war of Gog and Magog and more. But the main message for the individual is that it's not all about him. It's about him together with a higher purpose. At the end of the whole thing, we come inside. When Sukkot is all over, the crown of this whole series of Yomim Tovim, and it really started with Pesach, and it went to Shavuos, and now it came to this cleansing process, when we came to believe in Hashem, and we came to listen to Hashem from Shavuos, and we came to trust in Hashem through Sukkot. But we also came to appreciate all the joy of life itself that we're talking about in the Arba Minim. When you realize that the gift that Hashem gave you should not corrupt you, you went through a bit of a detox. You know, you cleansed yourself from the misuse of Olam Hazeh, and you through a Yom Kippur and now in a Sukkah, but embracing the gift through the Arba Minim, and that brings you to a Simcha, enjoy life, all the parts of life. As Hirsch says all over the place, Iker Shechina Batachtonim. The Shechina wants involvement in real existence in this world. When you realize that, what a geshmak life it is with the Torah, dancing around the Torah. Simchas Torah, when you come inside, is the kickoff to all the lessons learned from the whole cycle of all the Yomim Tovim. Because now with the Torah, you can be better. You can really uplift every single thing that goes on in life itself.